of security determining how much of we can see from other people's cases. And we don't want full access to the committee, decided, thought that that wouldn't be good, but to have partial information, like if you wanted to know somebody, somebody you've got that comes in, do they have cases that are still pending in other counties or cities? You could do a search and that could show up this person's name, maybe a little bit of information, then you could say, oh, they're there. Then you could call the county or city jurisdiction, get all the information you need. Otherwise, I mean, that's kind of where we're sitting now from what I understood from the discussion, is that you can tell that there's another case pending in somebody else for this person, but might not get all the information from it, and just by doing a search. In any case, you would only have, be able to see it, you wouldn't be able to make any changes to anybody else's system. Do you have a question?
Yeah, in terms of input as to how things are finalized for the rollout, would it be possible, like, for me to send my paralegal down the loop and give some input? Because you said now's the time for comment.
Yeah, well, actually, that's what I wasn't sure of how we were going to do, because we have a committee that's definitely going to be looking at every piece of it. But as Bob was mentioning, it'd be very helpful, I think, to get input from other offices. And I know Ryan from Juab County has offered some of his folks to be able to look at it. He's on the committee too, but he'd like some of his assistants to look at it, because they're, quite frankly, I think they're the ones that are going to do the most of the input, at least. I'm not sure if that's true in everywhere, but that seems to be the case. And so it might be helpful, and I'm not sure where we want to go with this, but I can give, we have a test-based system that anybody could go in and play with and do whatever they want, and if anything gets screwed up, we can reset it really easily and start over again. And I can give anybody access to that we decide we want to.
It might be more beneficial. You're the one who's working through this process with Drone Technologies, right?
Yeah. I'm going to be the main go-between between them, but they're going to work.
So might it be more effective if we sent some people to you, if we could send them with a laptop or whatever, and you can help them as they try and work through this thing here, and then they can give feedback to you directly, that to me seems like I'd be willing to send one of my assistants from Duchesne out here so they can start working the program, working through it like they would normally do, and they can come up with their own questions, their own problems.
I think that would be valuable, but we don't even have to have them come, because it's online.
Okay.
It's hosted, remote, in the cloud. So I could actually give the link to it and create a login.
It might have been.
We could just talk over the phone or remote connect or whatever we want to do to get feedback.
That to me would be a great thing.
And I think one of the things we talked about was getting that sandbox, they call it, available to everybody as quickly as possible.
Well, the sandbox thing, which is the test base, which means we can play with it and it doesn't matter.
You can look at it, but it's not
this is the one we won't put real data in, just change the names, protect the guilty or whatever they are.
I think it'd be beneficial if you or the committee, if during a committee meeting you guys want to have people play with it during your meeting or immediately prior to your meeting, if you could set some times and say, okay, this is going to be open, we'll give you the link, here's the date and time, and I'll have, for the morning before that, have, my assistant help work the thing, so she has the ability to call in and give feedback at those meetings. Something of that effect, I think, would be a really bit of, or a time when you're going to be available via phone, you'll be here, and they can get on, log on, go through, and then ask you questions that then you can put down to paper. Something where they have a set time where they can go in and do something.
This is kind of like beta testing, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's not just beta testing. It's also just saying, is this going to work for us, or do we need to put another different field here? Do we go to that data here? Do we make it look a little different? Do we not have something? Is there something that we don't have on there that we really need to be able to create a case?
I think that
or
should
to
be
follow through a case or create a document
as much as possible.
And that's what we'd like to use.
Have a couple of months where you just open it up to say, hey, here's your comment period, essentially. I really think that would be invaluable to open up as big as possible.
Yeah, and I agree with that to some extent. The backside of that that's difficult is that you get so many conflicting comments. Somebody will say, well, we need to have this like this, and the other person says, no, like this.
Well, I think the comments,
it can be hard to balance that and decide which way to go. So I think what's going to happen, I appreciate all the comments we get, to tell you the truth, because we're going to need more feedback. there's two, but the committee's going to have to be, have a final say to say, yeah, this is the way it's got to be, even with all the comments, and they can consider all of it. But if we have, there's going to be, just like we did with PIMS, I remember when we were designing that, we had people who wanted this, they wanted that, and they were complete opposites, and we couldn't do both.
Right.
And so there's going to be some, so that option, the caveat would be that, yes, I would like to get that feedback, but that's okay from you folks.
Well, I think you need to have maybe one person, I mean, I don't know who all we're going to send this out to, but each office who gets it tested or whatever needs to have one person giving feedback, not every person in their office giving feedback. I like that.
Well, and one thing, Ron, that they should understand, this is coming in phases. We're going to be working on adding a taste to it and seeing how that works and working through that.
Yeah, we're not looking at the whole thing at once because it's too big of a piece to handle at once. So we're going to take this piece here and handle it. So I would be happy to, if you're all agreeable to it, you can just send me the person's information that you want to have access to, and then I'll contact them and work out times, dates, and a way to do it and everything.
This system still has a similar capability like PIMS did, where we can create our own forms.
Create your own what?
Like our own forms.
Your own documents, yes. Yeah. The way it looks is going to be like PIMS. You go in and enter it, that's the way it is for everybody. It's going to be like that, but your documents can be different. And you can design reports on the fly, and that'll be a bunch of training. And you can do searches that give you data back, and almost anything you can dream up, it can do. As far as bringing back data, it's not always a pretty looking form with all the colors and columns and stuff, but you can get search results from anything you can dream up that you need to do that the system holds and allows you to be able to search for that. So it's very flexible. But yeah, the way it looks and feels and what the forms have, the data that they have on it, are going to be the same for everybody, but your documents are going to need to be individual. We'll have some, like for example, we'll design some basic ones. You can go off of those or alter them to fit for what you need to do. Because as we learned with PIMS, it's no way is the documents going to be standard for everybody. Because even some judges want it slightly different, and some offices want it slightly different. So the basic format, we'll have a basic format of your information, subpoenas and stuff. There'll be a basic copy, and then from that you can take it and alter it to be your own. That's the one thing that can be individually, completely individual per office, is the documents and stuff. And the way that there's a screen that you can set up for each person can have, see something when they first log in can be different than everybody else. They can see a screen that looks, that tells them what they need to know right up front. But yeah, so, yes.
Ron, just being a user in Jesper right
now,
if I were to receive it just for a test and look at it on my computer, it's really not a user-friendly program. So if somebody were able to show me just really quick how it kind of works.
Well, that's what I'd have to do.
That may eliminate a lot of the questions, suggestions that might be thrown at you.
And having used both Jesper and seeing how this works, this is a lot more user-friendly than Jesper.
I didn't know if it was or not, but I've been looking at it. I have zero training. And they gave me access to it, I went into it, and I've been able to figure out how to do just about everything I've tried to do.
You would still need
But then again, I am pretty good at learning new stuff and figuring stuff out simply because I have that background.
You know, the thought that just occurred to me is maybe what the first one is like a webinar that Ron can host and all the users can log on. And
that's probably not a bad idea, and then we could be looking at it all at the same time, mm-hmm. and each individual could be logged in and it's walked through. That's not a bad idea.
And you can also do a follow-up at the UPAA training.
Although, Beth, I think that's definitely, if you would allow me to, I think it would be a great time to show everybody where we're at. By that time, hopefully, a lot of things will be a lot better than they are right now.
Two of the biggest concerns that jurisdictions have had with the MOA is that it's ambiguous as to what costs are going to be. And, you know, we've tried to explain that. And again, just to remind everybody, so I got $1 million grant, but the contract was $1.235 million. So right now, users, if I fail to get additional grant funds, which I think I'm going to be able to get, we're going to have to divide that remaining $235,000 amongst all the users. And so that would be, what that fee is, depending upon the number of users. And because we don't know that, We can't tell you exactly what that will be, and so, you know, we apologize. That's been one hang up or hold up for getting these agreements back. The other one is I want to know, because I put in there that the council may decide that each jurisdiction will need to pay a fee for Ron's services. I mean, as you can see, this is going to take up a lot of his time. You know, right now, people that use PIMS, there's that PIMS user fee. And again, I don't know if that's what the council is going to want to do, to assess a fee for Ron's time, or if we just decide this is how we want, you know, him to use his time, and so there won't be a fee. Or when I write the new grant, I include, you know, because I'm allowed to do administrative costs as part of the grant, just write that in. And I don't know that the council is ready to make that decision, and that's what we've told people, is we don't know what that's going to be. It's up to the council. I'm not ready to propose anything to the council, but, you know, we're lawyers. We understand we don't want to sign something if we don't know what the answer is.
Totally understandable.
So just so you know, that's one of the reasons we haven't had...
Just an update on cost. We know that if we don't get a grant to cover the rest of the cost, that's $235,000 that we have to come up with through user fees. Basically, if you get 150 users, that's about $1,600 per user. That's for the 5-year period.
Right, right.
And then after that, it would be probably a small percentage more than that for each user after that.
Yeah.
Well, I know it's going to be a percentage. I just don't know what that 3-5% is, the average that they go up every year. So.
And talking about user fees, is to follow up on Stephen's question from the last council meeting on prepayment. Is AG's office can't accept and hold funds, you know, for the prepayment. General Technologies will. They will accept, you know, prepayment. They'll take your money. And any interest that accrues between the time that you give them your money and when you go live, the interest will accrue to General Technologies. And if for some reason, whoever's prepaid has decided that they don't want to go with the product, you don't get your money back. So it's a basically non-refundable prepayment. So that's, you know, the questions that you had.
Yeah, that is the one of the issues that I've heard too is from a lot of folks is that we can get my council to approve it now, but if we don't go live for another year, the approval doesn't count. You know, yeah. They got to do it all over.
Well, I had money in my budget this past budget cycle to use. Luckily, I can still submit that through the end of this month.
Yeah.
And we're going to go with it, so...
So the issue is timing and when your budget can be approved for that money, and that's, I understand that's an issue. I don't know how to solve that.
But that, if that's something that, you know, the council or the individual jurisdictions it's really not a council question. For the individual jurisdictions, then we can approach Journal and find out what the mechanism will be, you know, the additional documents that we need to work up that we can provide that. So we'll just make sure that it...
Well, I guess the money that we pay in is going to be counted towards the $1.25 million.
Right.
Is what they're going to do. They're just going to accept that in increments until it's all paid for.
Right.
And then we have our product.
Right, right.
I'm willing to... You know.
Yeah, the way Journal works is they really don't need the user fee. Your agency will not need to pay anything until it goes live.
Right.
In your agency, in your office, and when it goes live, that's when those user fees are paid.
That's when my 5 years begins to be
alive. And for example, if you get two in 1 month, you know, like in August or something, those two are the only ones I have to pay. Nobody else would.
Right.
So they wouldn't worry about it. They'd just get the rest of it that goes. The one issue we have right now is $1,600 is about the amount it would be based on 150 users.
Right.
But right now we have, as a return to MOAs, we have 50 that have returned the MOA and joined your agreements. The user that they agreed to, that they said they wanted to use in their document in the MOA is adds up to 50 right now. So if those are the only ones that went with it, it would be triple the $1,600 per user. I don't think that'll happen. I think we'll get a lot. I think we'll get 150.
Well, I haven't sent mine back. We'll have 8 or 9.
I'm thinking we're probably going to go over 150 before it's done.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So. And that'll be fine. We can handle that too.
Okay, thanks, Ron. The next one is BCI issues. Grand County raised the issue of e-prosecutor interacting with BCI and security, you know, their very strict regulations. And so Ron has been working with Lisa Ashman from Salt Lake. It seems like we have that's really not going to be as big of a problem as Grand County had suggested.
Well, I'm still a little bit unsure if there's even any need for us to, if we're not going to do anything with BCI. But you wanted to send this position, information, you know, not disposition, but decline.
Declinations.
Declinations to BCI. That's been the plan. We tried to do that at PIMS and never got it working. If we do that, we definitely have to get BCI to approve, I don't know, approve the security of the system. I guess it has to be secure. But, and then Salt Lake County is going to do that. So I'm thinking if they're going to do that, the system will already be able to do that. I don't see why we couldn't latch onto that.
Piggyback on that.
But we, right. But so the idea is basically there's a survey, there's questions that the vendor has to answer, and then they do all that, and then once that's done, BCI says yay or nay. I don't see any, Lisa says there shouldn't be any problem at all, because they've already tentatively talked about it and said it should be fine. So I don't see any problem there. I know with PIMS, we never had to get any information with it, but maybe because it was hosted locally, not in the cloud. This one will be hosted in the cloud.
The issue should be if this system is going to have access to CGIS data, mm-hmm. and it's not.
It's not, so I don't.
We're still going to access BCI through their web portals. Mm-hmm.
Right.
As opposed to like our law enforcement jurisdictions, their, you know, Spillman, FatPot, and whatnot, they access, and those systems have access to CGIS data, so they have to comply with much stricter standards than we do.
So even if we send declinations, it's a one-way thing. We don't access any CGIS data at all. We just send something to them, and they put it in to a place that they then their system verifies and looks at it later. It's not even, it's just a one-off connection that's just there. It's not, we don't get any there. I don't think there would be any problem, but if any of you know anything more about it than I do, I'd appreciate feedback. But I'm working with Salt Lake County. If they get it done, it should work for all of us.
Yeah. Again, just we want to make
it's because it's the exact same thing. It's,
right.
The hosting's exactly the same.
And then the last thing, report from last council meeting, reported that Post was now going to have to charge us for Chris Fielding or whoever to come to our conferences to record, and it was about $3,000 per conference. And so y'all asked me to, Ron and I, to look up what it would cost for us to purchase the equipment. And, you know, so Ron and I have been looking, you know, the video audio equipment could be anywhere from $2,500 up to $7,000 for equipment. Editing software, it's now on a monthly fee. It's not like you pay a one-time fee, so we'd have a monthly charge for that. And then a streaming service. Some of the ones that I looked at, you can pay for 1 month. And so that's where that $100, that's the cheapest one I could find. If you buy a year subscription, then it would go down, but we would have that subscription service. So I don't know. Plus, Ron's not a video guy.
Can't just really use your phone.
I could probably learn, but you have to have the equipment, you have to have the editing software, you also have
FaceTime
to have
video.
The streaming service in order to do it live.
Right.
And so you have to have all those together, so it's an ongoing cost.
It's shaky.
Right, and so the advantage of the video, you know, that we've gotten from Post is that Chris has this amazing, incredible equipment that we could never duplicate and figure out how to work.
Probably over 100,000.
Yeah. So we're not going to, where you were never going to have the quality of video that we recording that we get from Post. So what the council has to decide is, do we want to buy our own equipment, have a lesser quality recording, or do we, and I think what we had talked about last time is that spring conference would probably be the only conference that we really would want to record, and just pay that fee and record spring conference. We will continue to record our conferences with just our little handheld video cameras that we use at BASIC, but y'all know the quality of those, so maybe what the discussion is if you want us to continue to record, maybe we invest in a little bit better camera system, but still maybe use Post for spring. So.
Did you talk to Post about a little bit of an offset because of our?
I did not, no, thank you. Okay, let me come back and report next time.
Let's just table that.
But, yeah, sorry, that was, I know I'd forgotten something.
Did we discuss how many times that's being accessed? The recordings.
Oh, Ron, do you have that information
on
our webpage?
A little while ago, and there aren't very many being accessed. Oh. It's like about 10 or 20 over, I think it was 50 in the last year.
So maybe all of them in June?
Some of those were me.
Yeah, exactly.
Because, you know, when I access it, I'm just looking at it to make sure it works.
Some in July.
And so probably about 35, 40 at the most have accessed it in the last year.
Just makes you wonder how, what is recorded.
Right, exactly.
Right. I mean, you know, we want to be on the cutting edge and providing great services, and one of those is providing, you know, videos, but is it cost effective?
The streaming service that we host the videos on is what, I think it was $300 and some odd, $380 a year.
Yeah.
That's an ongoing cost, whether anybody uses it or not. Or we just chop that off and just say, we can record the videos if we want to, put them on a DVD, if they want to watch it, we can send them a DVD. That's the other option.
Send them a Google Drive link.
Or Google Drive link might even be better.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's what we're doing with our DVDs for Discovery. Okay.
That's not a bad idea, actually, because that's a lot better than maybe the DVD go. Mm-hmm. And faster, too. So
how many people accessed it live?
What's that?
How many people watched it live?
During spring.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that we're able to track that. I was going to ask, can you tell based on the number of...
There was about 170.
Oh,
and they didn't pay for the conference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, they were registered.
But that number will probably go down this year on the Wasatch Front, right?
Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
On the Wasatch Front,
this was the remote.
Yeah. It's a lot better.
And then the later,
Utah County, you guys did, right? You had a lot. But
AG's office.
So this year, you'll probably send those people... to Salt Lake?
Yes.
Because there's no hotel.
So how many people historically have watched it live? Right?
Oh, we've only had it once.
Yeah, we've only done it once.
We did a long time ago out of Logan. When we did a fall conference on Logan, we also sent that to Salt Lake.
All right, so maybe if you can ask the questions you need to oppose.
So for this year, we will probably not, well, unless I can work something out with post, we may not be able to record, or if we do, it'll just be, you know, a poor quality recording for spring, unless I'm able to get something worked out before then.
If I could just provide an explanation to why I had to do this.
We understand the surcharge.
The surcharge account is just underperforming, and it has since I've been director. And I've had to get rid of an employee. Well, actually, I combined duties and assigned it to one person down in that area. So now Chris is assuming those responsibilities. And for him to prepare the report, it takes him almost a week just to pull all the equipment, organize it, and go set up. And it's causing a strain on my daily operations during those periods, because we also have the Governor's Summit and other requests as well. So I apologize. We try to keep the cost down. I mean, that's still far cheaper than you can get through a hotel.
Oh, yeah.
They're like $15,000, yeah. Upwards of $20,000. So I try to keep it as fair as possible, but I just wanted this body to
know. Yeah, no, we don't begrudge you.
No, we don't get it at all.
We understand.
We're in that same boat.
Come on.
Oh, Haley has a question for you. So is the $3,000 just to record it, or are you able to do live as well?
That's for everything.
Yeah.
Okay.
If we can record, we can do it live.
Right, right.
It's the same equipment.
Yeah.
All right, any other questions about IT issues from anyone? Hearing none, we actually need an executive session, so I need
to... Well,
go ahead.
We need to talk about under the other business before we get to that part.
Okay.
When I sent out prior to Christmas, there's a couple reasons I sent out the first draft of the agenda director summary is this the Google Forum issue. I don't know if you all had a chance to read through that, if you were on the forum. But for those of you that either weren't aware of it or have not read my summary, let me just go through it really briefly because we need some guidance from the council. Actually, Stephen is here with us. One of his deputy county attorneys posted a summary of events involving his interaction with a local law firm and then an appellate attorney that they hired. The deputy county attorney described that appellate attorney's conduct as incredibly unethical. And then what happened is that email that was intended for prosecutors only got forwarded to him to the law firm. It was disseminated to defense attorneys outside of who was intended to receive that. That is a major concern to me. The appellate attorney and the attorney from the law firm contacted me. They were understandably upset. I began researching whether the post violated any rules of professional responsibility, civility. His request was to take down the post, but I wanted to find out, you know, legally, we need to take down the post. And let me just be clear. The Google forum is not on UPC's webpage. It's hosted. I mean, it's a UPC Google forum. Tyson manages it, and I manage it. So it does have that UPC affiliation, but it's not, you know, it's not on our webpage. So I started this research, but in the meantime, I talked to the deputy who asked that the post be taken down, which I did. I then got an email from the appellate attorney asking that UPC post an explanation, a clarification on the forum. And that email request is in your materials as well as my response.
Washington and I.
Do we need to talk any further?
This isn't a safe haven here. Yeah. Defense attorneys, I'd like to know who leaked it, and I'd like the defense attorney to grow a tougher skin and shut up. I think we should spend like 3 minutes on this, honestly. It's ridiculous.
I think it would be helpful on the forum to list somehow who has access, because I know more than just prosecutors are on there.
Well, the
crime lab is on there. I think post people are on there. And not that those are the people that leaked it, but I think people knowing that it's more than just a tight-knit group of prosecutors may result in people not making those types of comments.
Well, and that's what we talk about as a staff, again, that I went through here. So let me, Jan, just to take a couple more minutes.
Maybe a disclaimer.
What we're proposing and get the council's guidance is, trying to put somewhere on there a disclaimer that the forum, we're not the author of it. We can't be held responsible for that. And I didn't think about including what Rob brought up, that it's a broader group, but then maybe really tie some what we do is, if the council wants, we will limit it solely to prosecutors or come up with forums that are prosecutor only. And if we want to have the Tox Lab and some of these other government agencies that we work with as prosecutors but are not prosecutors, you know, we start a separate group for them. You know, we talked about developing some guidelines, principles, just, you know, no name calling, make statements supported by fact, you know, everything's in there. But I told these two attorneys that I would bring this to the council, and I have brought it to the council.
Thank you.
And we'll follow up with you. But it's like I said, is I don't know how to address the confidentiality issues. As it's almost more concerning to me that, you know, this was thwarted. I understand the emotion of your friends, and I will say, and as I put in here, that appellate attorney's spouse, who is a prosecutor, was not a member of the forum, so it did not come from the spouse.
And neither is her boss.
What's that? Yeah, right, yeah. Margaret was not a member either, so.
You want
me? Yes, going forward.
Yeah, so it came from someone else, and of course we don't have any idea. And I don't know if that needs to be addressed somehow. You know, I would think that we all understand that this is designed for prosecutors. You know, when I was talking to the appellate attorney, I said, I fully am aware that UACDL has their own forum and they trash talk prosecutors all the time, but that never gets leaked.
Okay, as a person who has been on the UACDL listserv since its inception, 7 months ago, this goes on the UACDL website. And Ken Park, who was the
monitor,
or whatever you want to call it. I mean, there was quite a discussion about it. First of all, it's the honor system. It's not completely safe. This is what we came to a conclusion with at that time. It's not completely safe, it's the honor system. You know, people consider it, you know, who's the machine. They want to go around and find who's leaked the information, but ultimately you need to own your statements and your content,
no matter
if you think they're safe or not.
Yeah.
And then Kent, and you can probably call me and see how I get this, put out what I think is an excellent statement. set of rules, most of them under the standards of professionalism and civility, just really calling on people to think about their posts before